as far as your home baker, if you follow your 3 parts flour, 2 parts fat, and 1 part sugar, you'll 99.9% of the time come out with a very good product.
The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 32.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the show. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Couple of things. First, head on over to my podcasts page at culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts. And there you can join my Eating Liberty Facebook group or follow me on Twitter or the other social media icons I have there. You can also support the show on Patreon. Throw a couple nickels or dimes or, well, dollars my way for support. It'd be greatly appreciated. Also, trade me an email address for a copy of my Muffins e-cookbook. It's a foolproof way to bake muffins. Also, find, rate, and leave a positive review for the show on your favorite podcatcher. That moves the show up and gets more people to listen. The more people listening are the more people who get cooking. Lastly, if you would, while you're on the show notes page, share that with your friends on social media, either with Twitter or Pinterest or Facebook. We've just weeks left in the school year. Are you pleased with your kids' education? Would you like it to be better, but don't know how or where to find that help? The Ron Paul curriculum is the answer. There are no textbooks to buy. You can use the on-site free PDFs. There are over 9,000 video-based lessons. Students will learn business classes and personal finance and public speaking, and each course comes with the Ron Paul 100% money-back guarantee. Click over to culinarylibertarian.com/homeschool to learn more about the curriculum and how you can give your kids a better education. culinarylibertarian.com/homeschool. David Akimoto is back, and today he's talking cookies. David is the owner of David's Homemade Soft Cookies in Thailand. I'm asking David all about the details for making chocolate chip cookies. If you're in Thailand or plan on visiting, contact David's staff and arrange a delivery. You'll hear David explain why he has not yet shipped me my box of cookies. Also, there is a moment where I'm reminding David what he said. We had a technical problem and his computer disconnected, and he wasn't entirely sure what the last thing was that recorded, so I was just catching him up. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Well, morning for you anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for getting up on a Sunday and talking with me. I appreciate that.
Oh, not a problem.
So we've spoken to you about coffee and chocolate, and where you live in Thailand, those are two things which are mostly in your backyard.
Yeah.
We're going to be speaking a lot closer to home today about what's really in your backyard, and that is baking cookies and also mixing cookies. So we're not going to ask you to give any trade secrets away, but I think that learning something from a professional cookie baker can help all of us with a little bit more knowledge on how to make a great cookie, because summer's coming and who doesn't love a good cookie?
I'm the exact same.
All right, so let's just start off with the basics. So the first thing, as far as I'm concerned, to making a good cookie is the proper fat. So I use butter, but is that the best choice for a cookie?
I'm the same way as far as butter goes, because butter gives a unique type of flavor. It's the same as eggs. Eggs and butter give the best flavor out of anything that you can get. And as far as like for texture goes, I mean, when you bake in general, butter doesn't always give the best texture for every type of thing. But butter overall gives the best flavor. So I would personally recommend getting a very nice, unsalted, high fat content butter when you work with any type of pastry, just to get that extra flavor. So, you know, European butter is usually the best. They have a lower, they have a higher fat ratio because how they churn the butter is at a slower pace compared to your American style butter. So you're looking at European butters on average about 82% fat.
Now, I agree with you on the use of European butters in things like Danish and croissant and puff pastry. One of the big challenges that I think anybody who shops in a grocery store faces is, how do you know if it's European butter or not? One of the key factors is price, but I mean, just from looking at any package, I don't see any way for the consumer to know is brand A or brand B or brand C substantially different in fat content. And that, I think, is already we're starting off with a potential frustration because we're saying use this high quality thing. And I think probably the audience matters. If you're making cookies for your kid's first grade class, I don't think that in some cases, the European butter can be $8 a pound. I don't really think $8 a pound butter for a bunch of first graders I don't think that's a wise use of $8. I don't think they're going to care.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So if you're looking at just making cookies for like your kids, you know, when they have the parties at school and stuff, I would say any unsalted butter would be a safe choice just because you can control the salt content that you want to put inside your cookie. But that being said, if you want to treat yourself to something nice, when I was in the States, I just went back a couple months ago and I was really thinking about opening up a branch back home. I had the frustration of finding butter locally. Unless I went to an actual, you know, like one of those restaurant wholesale department shops that support restaurants to find the butter. What I found when I was in the States, when I went to like Safeway, the easiest choice that had the best flavor for me was either their Kerrygold unsalted or Challenge unsalted butter. Those two, to me, out of all the cookies I made while I was back home, were the best back in the States. It's a lot different in Thailand because you have different butter here and there's things back home that you can't find here. But in the States, those are the two that I would personally recommend, which are very easy to find in the grocery store. And not, I mean, Kerrygold is a bit pricey, but Challenge is actually pretty affordable.
No, I use Challenge here. There's a couple of other ones that I buy, and that seems to be a West Coast thing. I don't remember seeing it in New Jersey or in Florida. I tried Kerrygold for croissants and was very disappointed. I for cookies, it's probably fine. I thought I was doing a good thing, and it turned out no. Now, I'm not going to malign Kerrygold. I'll say it's the baker's fault, not the butter's fault. But I have found, who knows? For me, as far as the European-style butter goes, the brand President's has been very good for me from a consumer standpoint. What can you get in the store? I've had really good luck with Presidents for puff pastry and for croissants.
Okay. I haven't used that butter, so I'm not really familiar with it.
Now, next time you come back, give it a shot.
Yeah, I will. I always like to bake when I'm pretty much anywhere. It's like my thing to do.
And no one lets you not bake, so what do you... It may as well. David's here. Get the oven ready. All right. So we're going to kind of bounce all over the place. So we've started with the very beginning. Now we're going to go to the very end. And obviously cookies are comfort food, but just like breads and pastries, we've got some rules that we need to follow, some ratios we need to follow. I know that baker's percentages tend to be pretty confusing even to bakers. But if we're talking about, so in the world of cookies, which is a really big world, we're talking here about the basic chocolate chip style cookie, which could also be in the style of, say, a peanut butter cookie or an oatmeal raisin cookie. We're not talking about the shortbread styles or the tweels or many of the other kinds of thumbprint cookies. There's a whole, or spritz cookies. Those are a whole different thing. But what I'm asking you about, because this is what David's cookies are based off of in Thailand, are these amazing chocolate chip looking cookies. So can we say that there is some sort of a basic ratio of butter to flour to sugar and use that as our base, or no?
There is overall. I mean, with cookies in general, the ratio is 3-2-1, which is your 3 parts flour, 2 parts fat, and 1 part sugar. If you follow the basics when you're toying around with recipes and you stick with that, you'll usually get a decent product. That being said, I mean, when I first started David's Bakery, I made the same cookie 300 to 400 times, testing it, changing the ratio, you know, by like 1-2%, just because I wanted to get that different texture that I was looking for the perfect cookie in what I felt. And it's a lot of trial and error, but as far as your home baker, if you follow your 3 parts flour, 2 parts fat, and 1 part sugar, you'll 99.9% of the time come out with a very good product that you'll be satisfied with as a home baker.
All right. Now, with that as our cookie base, what is the ratio of garnish?
It's funny because when you talk to every single person, the garnish is always varies. The most important thing to me when I talk to anyone, when they want to put anything inside for their garnishes, is make sure it's something that you personally like to eat. So if you're looking at a original chocolate chip cookie, pick a chocolate that you personally like to eat by itself. It'll elevate the cookie taste for you personally. So if you like Hershey, use Hershey. If you like using Lindt, use Lindt. Any type of chocolate. And as far as that goes, what I personally say on the lower scale for your chocolate chip, the least amount output, and I'm hoping anyone that is into baking has a scale, I would highly recommend using a scale, just because baking in general is more like science, where cooking is more of, you know, cooking, you can add this and that and find something that you actually enjoy. Like, oh, it needs a little bit of salt, or it's more forgiving. Where baking, if you follow the recipe and you use a scale per gram, you're going to get the same product overall, as long as you do the process perfectly. So the lowest amount I would put per batch of cookie is maybe 120 grams, which is not much. It's very low. And the highest point I'll go is probably like 300 grams. So you're looking at anywhere from 10 to 15% of what your batter consists of your flour, fat, and sugar, up to like 30% max.
And that's going to make sure that there's enough cookie batter to hold on to all of the garnish and still bake, so you get both just lots and lots of stuff and cookie.
Yeah, because you don't want to have it where it's just all chocolate or all nuts and you don't taste the cookie anymore, and vice versa, where you're supposedly eating a chocolate chip cookie and you're like, hey, why is there no chocolate in my cookie?
or why is there no cookie in my chocolate?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like less of a problem. But anyway, I get your point. Without giving away any of your secrets, because that's not what I'm here for, give us some general principles to follow for the mixing. And so specifically, I think there's two, possibly three, but two for sure, real confusing areas or areas where confusion may be most likely to happen. And the first one is, most recipes just read cream, the butter, and sugar. Well, what in the heck does that mean? So how much is enough? And what happens if the butter and sugar is creamed too little or creamed too much? And really, How do we know?
Okay, so it's easy to tell if the creaming is too not enough because of the fact that when you're creaming the sugar, you're trying to incorporate the sugar and the butter together. And the biggest key factor what you're trying to do when you're creaming it is aerating the butter. So if you had a microscope and you could actually see inside, you would see that between the sugar crystals and the butter, you're adding bubbles inside the butter itself, which is making it expand. So for instance, when we toy around with creaming butter in general, you can notice the big difference from if you cream butter for 2 minutes versus 7 minutes, because not that it's going to get heavier, you're going to get it to expand. So if you use the cookie scooper, which is very similar to an ice cream scoop, say you can scoop, you know, 20 cookie dough at 2 minutes. At 7 minutes, you'll have 26. It expands more, so you get more dough out of it. So personally, I would say 5 to 7 minutes is the perfect amount of time to cream the sugar. And that being said, make sure your butter is at room temperature, not straight out of the fridge and not about to melt. I like to personally use about 70 degrees. As far as for me, that's what I feel is the perfect amount, where we usually cut the butter and then we stick a thermometer right inside just to see the perfect, just because the temperature will start to slowly rise in the room temperature. And when I say 70 degrees, it's Fahrenheit. It's not Celsius. Normally we use Celsius, but yeah, I'm just trying to help the audience. Okay.
No, I understand. That's a fair point. This audience knows. This audience would know that. All right. So I'm going to, it seems to me that if something happens in your bakery, it's July and the air conditioning unit has broken and your butter is at 80 degrees, it's getting a little low on the soupy side, getting sort of toward that plastic stage. Since the creaming process is, and along with adding air to it, is also adding friction, which friction is heat. If your butter is warmer, or even if someone in Florida and the air conditioning is fine, but Florida in the summer, it can be warm, and butter is going to feel that. Would you then cream warmer butter less time because now you've already got temperature into the butter before you've done anything?
So I would cream it a little bit less, but at a higher speed.
Ah, okay.
But gradually, slowly make it faster, just because you don't want to turn it on full blast and then everything flies out.
No, then you just wear it. Then it's just decoration on your face.
Yeah. I've done it before on accident because I wasn't paying attention, and I've turned our mixer on, and I was like, this is a bad idea after the fact.
Yeah, no, I had worked at a pizza place in high school, and accidentally, at least a bag, maybe two bags, 50 pounds of flour, accidentally on three, boom. it was a cloud. It was, well, I didn't do it again.
Yeah, the easiest way, if you want to know how your butter actually changes when you're aerating, if you add food coloring to your base, just to toy around, you'll be able to tell the difference, because the color will actually get lighter and more of a pastel color as you keep creaming butter. Just because, like, for frosting, for instance, people always ask, how can you get your frosting on cakes to be so, like, pure white? And I'm like, well, it's because I cream the butter for an extremely long time, about 10 to 15 minutes when I'm doing a frosting. Because what happens is that butter goes from that tinge yellow white color to a pure white, just because I'm aerating it so much. I wouldn't do that for a cookie. That's way too long. But for if you want to do like a buttercream frosting, I feel like if you actually cream the butter longer, it makes the color a lot nicer, more pleasant.
I agree with you. All right, so we've got our sugar and our butter. We've talked about some of the basic ratios. So the last thing we need to talk about on this part is the flour. I think probably most cookie recipes ask for or call for all-purpose flour. And in my own cookie baking experimentation, I've discovered that bread flour, that extra gluten, actually helps make a chewier cookie, which was, to me, that was a benefit. I enjoyed that. At your bakery, do you use all-purpose or something else, and why?
So we use a mixture of AP and T55, which is your French bread flour. So we use a 50-50 ratio, and I don't mind anyone knowing that. I feel like it'll help.
T55 is a powerful flour.
Yeah, it's very powerful. So what we do, and the thing, if you do, like if any listener here wants to use T55, you have to realize that it can burn very easily. So you do need to really look at it in the baking time, especially if you're using a convection oven. If you're using a regular style home oven, it's more forgiving. But if you're using a convection oven and you're baking with T55, you really have to worry about the temp when you're baking, just because it can burn quickly versus AP flour is more forgiving in high heat. So we in some cookies, we use a 50-50 ratio. Some cookies, we use only AP. And some cookies, we use a about 25% T55, 75% AP, just because, I mean, when I made the cookies, I went through every type of ingredient and I've made so many variations just to get, for instance, sugar. Okay, how much sugar can I put in to make sure it stays a cookie and doesn't turn more into like a cake, but it's sweet enough, but not too overpowering sweet just with the sugar itself. So I went with that. Flour did the same thing. I used all types of AP, bread, cake, T55, T45, just mixing things and testing around with it. I feel like if you mix the two together, it gives, you have the exterior of the cookie to be like a crunch where the inside stays very chewy. And so it's the best of both worlds. I love soft baked cookies. And I feel personally that's the best ratio, but everyone has their own variation when it comes to their.
Yes, that is absolutely true. Well, so in the theme of variety in cookies, let's talk a little bit about sugar. We talked about creaming sugar. Brown sugar, of course, has more moisture because of the molasses, but caramelizes less well than white sugar. Now, most cookie recipes, at least in, like on the back of the chocolate package, are going to say, use white and brown sugar. So I have decided for my own cookies, the ratio is actually 2-to-1 brown to white. Do you do the same thing? And what has been your experience in playing with those things?
So with white sugar, it normally makes your cookies a lot thinner and crispier, where obviously brown sugar does make it chewier. My ratio has also changed too. I do 2-to-1 and I also do 50-50. So, 1-to-1. Depending on the type of cookie I'm making and what kind of flavor on. I mean, brown sugar tastes amazing in a cookie. So like your chocolate chip cookies and things like that, I use more brown sugar. But if I want a distinct flavor to shine out, say, for instance, a matcha cookie. If I want to do a matcha cookie, or we just created, and it took me about 12 times to get it right on this type. We do a Japanese sweet potato cookie, which we just introduced. That one has a 1-to-1 ratio just because we want to really make that type of flavors stand out. It's the same for our, and people look at me very weird when I say this, is we made a wasabi cookie also. And it sounds very weird, but everyone that has eaten it is shockingly oversurprised of how good it is, even though it's not an overpower of wasabi. It's very light. You can tell it's there. It's in the back. We don't use a lot of wasabi in it because the first time I made it, I used way too much and it was a very painful eating it. And I had to.
Well, now, David, I have to ask you, since you compared to me, you are much closer. Are you actually using for real from Mount Fuji wasabi or the same powdered stuff everybody else uses?
So you can use the powder, which is not real, but we use the real stuff. And it's hard because when you use anything, even when we toy around and we add things like that, it messes with the texture of the cookie. So your daily baker at home is not going to run into those problems. But if you really wanted to go out of your comfort zone and do things like use real wasabi, it's gonna change the texture of your cookie. And it's the same with our sweet potato. And I tried so in Southeast Asia, salted egg, your salted duck egg is very popular in many drinks, desserts, foods. So I wanted to make a cookie, but because of those egg yolks that you use, it changed the texture drastically, which I can't do. I can't make that cookie. It either tastes amazing and it falls apart, and it's the texture's like sand, or it Take the texture's amazing, and you can't even tell the salted eggs there, so it's very difficult in that sense.
Well, that does sound challenging. And since you set me up perfectly, let's talk for just a second about eggs. Most of the recipes read add one egg or two eggs or some quantity of eggs, but they never specify the size. Now, when I was teaching my kids in culinary school, I told them that for standardized recipes, one egg means a large egg. Is that what you're using? Is that what you think that that means?
Yes, I perfectly agree with you. Large egg is the perfect amount. If you want to get technical, you can weigh your egg. It's about 55 to 60 grams of your yolk and your egg whites. But a large egg overall around the world is going to be very similar in size, just because they measure the size of the egg itself. In Thailand, it's a bit different. So for me, it was very difficult when I first started because they don't say large or extra large, they put numbers. So they go from 0 to 5 and it's so confusing, but now I understand.
So, just with all that, now you have to tell me what's the right size egg in Thailand?
Number one. Yeah, 0 is too big. It's like a jumbo size egg. And I was shocked the difference when I first started messing around with stuff.
Interesting. Well, these are things you would never think about. When you add ingredients that aren't chocolate, any kind of your nuts or coconut or seeds, do you toast them first, before you add them, so that toasting really enhances the ingredient flavor?
Yes, I always toast or roast them before I put them in. And you don't have to worry about them burning when they're cooking in the oven. Most people tend to ask me that. Hey, if I already toast them before, will they actually burn while they're in the oven? They won't because they're mixed into the batter. So you don't have to worry about that so much. Now, if you're trying to decorate it nicely and putting it on top of the cookie itself, you might have that problem. We do a maple baking cookie. We caramelize the bacon with maple. And what happens is, so the bacon is extremely crisp and cooked already, and we put it inside our batter, and it never overcooks and burns. I toyed around in the beginning and put it on top, and obviously it burnt, so we had to toss that batch away. And with cookies in general, I highly recommend when you make the dough to put it in the fridge or the freezer as the dough itself for at least a day. That way you get the flavors to really settle in before you actually bake it. You can make the dough and just bake it right away. But if you want to just get that extra kick of flavor, I would personally recommend waiting a day if you can. Some people can't. So if you make your nuts and toast them, and then you let them get to room temperature, and then you add them to the dough, and you just pop them in the fridge or the freezer, And then the next day you come in and you can bake them. And now if you freeze them, you have to, you know, add a minute or two in your bake time. But your nuts will be fine. And anything that you add to your dough itself.
I have found that with the possible exception of a proper Scottish shortbread cookie, and obviously Florentines don't count, but in most of the kinds of cookies we're talking about, the chocolate chip, peanut butter, oatmeal, raisin, the cookie dough, the cookie batter definitely improves with a minimum of 4 hours in the refrigerator, just so that the flour can hydrate.
Yes.
And all the, so there, what you're improving is you're improving the flavor, but you're also improving the consistency of the batter itself so that it bakes better.
Yes.
And produces a better result. For one quick minute, let's go back to 1 second about the sugars, because we'd mentioned that everyone has a preference. Some people like a thin, crisp cookie. I like a taller, gooier, breadier. I mean, still plenty of stuff inside, but I like a chewy, still moist cookie. Is this something that can be managed just by changing the ratios of brown sugar to white sugar, or is there something else that needs to happen to get a thin, crisp cookie?
For a thin, crisp cookie, you could do the sugar. And also what I would do is I would add more egg white than egg yolk. So for instance, just so if you don't want to weigh the eggs out, maybe use one egg yolk and two egg whites. So, you know, you can, I don't know what you would want to do with the extra egg yolk that you have.
Pudding.
Yeah, but you have the option that the egg white itself would actually make the cookie more crispy itself, where the egg yolk will make it more chewy. So
okay.
If you want to more chew your egg, add that extra egg yolk and vice versa.
All right. I feel like we've got a pretty good handle on some of the basics here. Now, the real important question is, when is a cookie done? Now, we've talked about freezing the cookie and then adding an extra minute, chilling the cookie, using it right when we made it. So we've got some temperature problems there. And since cookies can't tell time, we really have to be able to do, we need some way that we can look at the cookie without looking at the clock and say, this cookie is done. And what is your method for determining that cookie's doneness?
So when I talk to the staff about making cookies when they first start working there, we have generally a time frame that it could be done in. So we have a timer that we set. But within the last, 2 minutes or so, they actually very carefully look at the cookie itself. If you want a soft, chewy cookie, I would recommend high temperature, something like 400 degrees Fahrenheit, give or take. If you're Celsius, like 190 to 220. Roughly, and anywhere from 7 to 12 minutes. What's going to happen is when you first look at the cookie inside, it's going to look like nothing's happening to it. The cookie's actually going to probably get about double the size in the oven itself. And what you're really looking for is the cookie to brown slightly on the exterior because the Maillard effect is happening. And then you're going to have all these little crevices and cracks on the top. Not really a huge crack per se, but, you know, these crevices that are going to start to form on the cookie on the top. Usually at that point, when it has a bunch of crevices with it being brown, is when it's done, where you can take out of the oven. And just make sure when you take it out of the oven to let it sit out and not try to take it off, because what's going to happen is it's still cooking. And it's going to be too soft if you try to take it right off, and it's going to break. If you want a crisp cookie, I would go to a lower temperature, maybe 300 to 325, about 160 Celsius, and cook it for a longer time. You're looking at maybe almost a 20-minute cook time.
Wow.
You know, and that's going to make you one of those sugar, you know, cookies, the crispy ones, not the soft and gooey. But yeah, look at the cookie and you'll be able to tell. It's the easiest way.
One of the things that I've learned to do is press gently, ever so gently, on top of the cookie. And if it springs back, that's my cue that it needs to come out of the oven. And I also agree with you that the cookie, just like a good steak and bread, it's got some carryover cooking time. And just because it has come out of the oven does not mean it's done baking. One of the things that I have been stressing with young bakers forever is the baking process also includes the cooling down process. And that's...
Yeah.
I guess it's sort of obvious if it's out of the oven, it must be done, but it's not. And so that's a real important tip, because and I'm guilty of this with bread, especially a good brioche, I cut it too soon. When you break the cookie or cut the bread or cut the steak, whatever was happening now is done. You've halted the cool down process, because like popping the balloon, everything comes out, and so you've frozen it in time, and you have ended up with a less than spectacular product, and that's sometimes a sad thing. So we've got our mixing, we've creamed well, we've got our ratios of stuff, we've got our garnishes and our ingredients, and our cookies are baked, we baked them properly, we pulled them out, they've rested, we're ready to eat them, and we made way too much. What is the best way to store these? In plastic bags, throw them in a Tupperware, what do we do? And when we bring them out of the freezer, how do we let them thaw?
Okay, so if you know your cookies are going to be devoured in a day or two, you can just put them all in a Tupperware, and you know, and you'll be fine. If you have way too many where it's impossible to eat that many cookies, the freezer is the best way. I would not put it in a refrigerator, just because of the fact that the cookies would dry out. The freezer is the best temperature, just because it's frozen. And I know it's a pain, but individually wrapped in like a, if you have a sealer, would be best. But if you don't, you can put them in a Tupperware, and just make sure it's covered so it's not straight in the freezer, so you don't get freezer burn or anything like that. And when you take it out of the freezer, give it about an hour to two, depending on how hot it is outside and the humidity. An hour or two before you actually consume, because it'll get down to room temperature. And I'm against this, but some people are okay with it. You can put it in the microwave for about, you know, 10 to 12 seconds if you're in a rush. But you are going to change the texture of the cookie when you do that. So,
yeah, I am morally opposed to putting anything baked, frozen, anything baked at all. It doesn't matter what condition it's in the microwave. I think that's a violation of so many different laws. It's just not funny.
Yeah, I agree.
But I also recognize that I'm a little bit conservative on food things. So, all right. Very good. Well, this has been everything I wanted it to be, because I knew you would be the guy to talk to about everything cookie. Give us your webpage, give us your Facebook page, and most importantly, and I've teased you about this online and I'm still waiting, who can receive your cookies in the mail?
So I've shipped cookies to the States. That being said, it's very...
You didn't ship them to me.
It's very expensive to ship.
I know. I'm teasing you.
Even my brother hounds me about me shipping cookies to him back home. And I told him, I was like, I'll give you free cookies if you pay for the shipping. Because the shipping is ridiculously expensive. To ship to America, almost anywhere, it's like $100 for like 6 cookies. It's insane, because it has to get there in time where it's still fresh. And, you know, and so.
All right. Well, you're forgiven for not sending me cookies. I didn't realize it was that much. You're off the hook.
Yeah. So, I mean, we ship throughout Thailand. If you ever come out here, we ship all throughout the country in Thailand. And so the shipping process here is very easy and very quick.
I was giving you forgiveness for not sending me cookies at $100 for shipping. Holy majoli.
Yeah, it's crazy. So shipping's very expensive. That's why I always tell my brother, I was like, if you want cookies, you pay for the shipping and I'll give you the cookies for free.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Well, so in Thailand, do you, in and around your bakery, do you have people delivering? And that's just interesting. And maybe people in Thailand who don't know will say, hey, I want some cookies. But also, how can people find you on your webpage and your Facebook page?
Okay. So our Facebook is David's Homemade Soft Cookies. It's the same for Instagram. And we, in Thailand, we use something called Line App. It's a business platform of Line, which Line is more of just like a chatting program. Line ads more for businesses, and almost every corporate business and small business uses Line ad in Thailand. And it's to, you know, you can broadcast your product. You can order things directly through it. And it's just like online shopping, basically. So what we do is we do a delivery service within our vicinity as far as home delivery. Our wholesale clients, we deliver directly to them. But as far as our customer base goes, most of our customers, what they do is they'll buy online and then we'll ship it to their house, or if it's within the vicinity of our delivery route, we'll actually deliver it straight to their house. So that's the two ways that we actually do it. So we ship all throughout the country of Thailand. So people have ordered, you know, from down south all the way to up north. And so anyone can order. I've had people that have flown here for vacation that have contacted me personally or the company and has asked if there's any way we can ship it to the hotel, which we can. What we do is we take the order in. They pay for it through PayPal usually because they don't have the paying services that they can because they're not locally to here. And then what we do is we schedule it with the hotel. So we find out when they're going to be here and we ship it. So that way it gets there right before they get there. Like we'll get it there in the morning. So they get there in the afternoon and we'll contact the front desk to let them know. So it's a nice treat when they get on that long flight straight to Thailand and they get here and then there's a box of cookies right there for them.
Wow, that's spectacular customer service. I'm impressed, David. Good for you. Well, I hope that continues to work out well for you and continued good luck and success. You mentioned to me, and you maybe have told us a couple of them, that you had developed a couple of new flavors. So you did mention the Japanese sweet potato and the wasabi, which still is interesting. Are there anything new flavors that you have mastered?
So we have these seasonal flavors. Those are the two seasonals. During Songkran, which is the Thai New Year, they have the biggest water fight in the world, and it's insane. Everything's closed that week. And, it, you know, coming from America, it's very shocking that everything is closed. I'm saying literally everything except for your emergency services. They're closed. But during that time, my factory was closed, and what I did was I wanted to develop flavors. That's my perfect time because I'm not busy dealing with work because everyone's off. That is my time where I can go into our test kitchen and actually be left alone and really think. So what I do is I order all my ingredients prior to that because I won't be able to get during that. And I'll work on all my development for our seasonal menu for the year for the ingredients that are fresh during that time. Obviously, there's some ingredients that aren't fresh in different times that I have to order and use during that time. But for the wasabi, Japanese sweet potato, I developed a mocha cookie. With the mocha cookie, we infuse the coffee itself in the butter. So we make the butter into a coffee butter and we use that for our flavoring instead of adding, you know, ground up espresso, like instant espresso or the extract. I like to find a coffee that I personally enjoy drinking and a roast that I like. And I will grind it up and I will cook it with the butter and then let the butter just, you know, infuse and let it sit on the side. And we make a mocha. I have a black lychee that we developed that'll probably still stay on the menu. And I'm missing one, but I can't think of it off the top of my head right now. But I mean, when I was making my my recipe book for the staff to do, which I did recently, just to make it easier for them to look through, because I was converting it from English to Thai. I have over 60 different flavors, but we only sell 12 at a time. So we have a menu that changes every 3 months, roughly. So we'll take the lowest selling 3 or 4 cookies and we'll introduce new flavors. So it's always changing, and the top 3 or 4 flavors never change. So, you know, your chocolate chip's never going to go away because everyone orders that. Our marshmallow s'mores, another one that's a big seller, and our cookie and cream Oreo. Those three probably will never go away just because they've been very high up there. But our newer flavors, we have a matcha that we get from Japan.
What is matcha?
Matcha is a green tea, but what it is it's dried out and it's grinded down into a powder form. And so it has a distinct smell and a taste to it. It's very big in Japan and in Asia in general. I personally don't like it. My wife loves it, and a lot of customers have been very fond of it. And then we do a Cookie Monster cookie, which kids love. That's
the blue one I've seen.
It's a blue one, but it has almost every type of candy you can think of inside the batter. That's probably why the kids love it. You have Twix, M&M, Oreo, Kit Kat. I mean, there's so many that.
Very good. Well. All right, well, have a spectacular morning and a good Sunday, and I hope the weather's nice for you, and thank you very much for taking time out of your day to talk to me. I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure talking to you anytime.
Very good. All right, we'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. Check out David's Facebook page to see the Cookie Monster cookie and the Red Velvet cookie and all the rest. If you live in the States and don't prefer to spend $100 on shipping, check out Olive Nation at culinarylibertarian.com/olivenation for their impressive selection and brands of chocolate chunks and chips and bars and slabs for all your chocolate needs, including chocolate chip cookies or brownies or dinner. CulinaryLibertarian.com/Olive Nation. That's CulinaryLibertarian.com/Olive Nation. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon.
Hey, listen, just as an aside, you may find value in making an ebook out of some of your top selling cookies and making that available as something you sell online, and then it's a digital product and everybody in the world can buy it.
Yeah. I've been thinking about it. And just trying to find the time where I can sit down and really like record it and talk about it. It's just been so chaotic lately, in a good way. Our business has, I just did an event. So there's a huge convention center in Bangkok that I did about 2 months ago. And it's mainly for coffee. So what it is, it's for is like franchising in a sense. A lot of companies will go there to try to franchise their product all throughout the world. So they set it up. So you'll see, you know, huge companies there. And I got invited to bring my product there, but I told them I wasn't going to franchise, but I do wholesale. So we did the event basically just on wholesale to support cafes and hotels and stuff. So a lot of people went there. And so we opened a lot of accounts that day. So it's been chaotic ever since doing that, which I'm happy we did it. It's just been crazy. I need to up the manpower at my place.
Well, David, I know somebody who can do the typing for you.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Hello. We should, we'll talk next week and figure something out.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Because I've done an ebook and I'm going to do another one. So
okay.
I've got some experience in this area.
There's two things I wanted to work on this one. Like, I want to do that. And then the other one I want to do is, I have the title for the book. I don't know how to start. I want to call it A Baker Abroad. And basically me moving here, setting up a business, all the ups and downs, all, you know, just everything, like kind of like a life story in a sense.
Right.
From the beginning until now. Like, I wanted to do those two things. It's just chaos right now.
Well, what you need a ghostwriter.
Yeah, that's what I've been looking for.
Hello. Well, maybe you found him.
Okay, that'd be awesome.
Let's talk next week. Well, all right, so I know it's 8:30 in the morning for you, and it's probably still kind of early, and there's a good chance you haven't even had coffee yet.
I did not. The coffee shops in the Campanum, they don't open. It blows my mind because it's such a small town. They don't open until like 10 or 11 a.m. And I'm like, who drinks coffee this late? and my coffee machine broke. So I'm like, and then I have a French press, but it's at the factory. And I'm like, I don't want to go on Sunday all the way there just to get it and come back. Because if I do that, then I'm just like, it's so far away. Like,
oh my gosh, what a withdrawal symptoms coming in.
Yeah, like Bangkok, everything opens early. You can get coffee at 5 or 6 in the morning, no problem.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
And they stay open. Yeah, they stay open very late, like 12 in the morning. So the awesome thing about Bangkok is you can get food or drinks anytime, basically. You know, even if you want good street food, you can go out and get amazing street food at like 3 in the morning if you wanted to. Instead of, you know, in the States, you're stuck with Denny's and McDonald's. Yeah, those places that are open late, you know?
I do. I have familiarity with that, Dylan.